You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So obviously the Anfield Raps recorded from the heart of the city, and most of the views that you hear are from people who are from or living around the city. But this is a huge topic, and we thought it'd be good to canvas the opinions of some international supporters and some of Liverpool's global fan base to see if either opinions differed or even just the process of how they reached the same sort of, you know, outlooks kind of differed. So we're going to go around the world on this, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. But to start us off, it feels apt to go to Boston. I'm not the big man, but the biggest man I know in Boston, Patrick Delaney. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us on Zoom.
Oh, thank you for having me, John. I'm really excited to be able to talk to you today.
So, yeah, so when we set this up, obviously the Super League was still a thing, and now it very much isn't, but it's nice to sort of have the reflection. What did you make of it all then? What did you make of the speed of it happened, the sort of speed of the collapse? And you know, I'm sure you guys out there, you've got a really big, you know, supporters club kind of culture kind of out there, and a lot of Liverpool fans. So I'm sure the WhatsApp groups were flying. What was the kind of general kind of consensus of the whole thing?
I mean, right away, I remember sending a text to my dad, who's the one that got me into football and into Liverpool, and he was just immediately, it's just, I don't think a single person liked this announcement at all. Everyone was, you heard the rumors for years and years and years that the Super League might be a thing, and everyone had that kind of reaction of, like, this modern football has, like, its soul being taken out of it, and, you know, taken away from the fans, and just everyone was just like, this is, like, is this the end of modern football? It's just like, there are plenty of people that saw that, you know, this is not why I got into football. I enjoyed, as an American, I came to appreciating the English, like, game and the structure because it had these pure elements of competition, of promotion and relegation, which was a new concept for me. So as soon as pretty much everyone heard of it over here, it was like a stab at like what it meant to be a supporter, or what it meant to be like for like fair competition. We just all hated it. We immediately wanted some sort of statement, some sort of pullback. And 48 hours, I guess, is, you know, better than I probably thought going into this.
Yeah, no, quicker than we all thought. It's really interesting hearing you talk there, because I think often when we when we speak about FSG or owners who are from different countries, you know, we talk about misunderstanding the sort of local fan base and misunderstanding, you know, the people on the ground here. But it was interesting hearing you talk there about a misunderstanding of the international fan base as well, which is a misunderstanding of what attracted you guys in the first place to Liverpool and to the Premier League in kind of general, really, or you know, and trying to make something more like what you're sort of, you're always kind of a bit bored of.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I grew up, I know I was a Red Sox fan, I was a Patriots fan, like the local teams here.
Yeah.
And I've kind of just gotten bored of that. It just wasn't that fun to see like the same teams, the same names every single year. And when I first became like a football fan, it was this revolutionary new system where so the teams at the bottom don't have to intentionally tank for a draft pick.
Yeah.
And that's incredible to me that, you know, you have to fight to the very end. And that seemed to kind of line up with like what I like from just like greater society in general. It's just, you know, you have to fight, you have to keep on working, and you when you do better and when you are you're rewarded for that and not rewarded for intentionally doing bad. So I think it encourages like just more competition. And I think that's what draws a lot of people to like, cause in MLS, we have a closed system as well. And it's the third most popular league in the country behind the Mexican League and Premier League. We love this competition and we love how it operates, and to see something go against that, you're going to get a negative reaction from everyone.
Do you get a bit frustrated in the owners, and that obviously you share the same city, but you know, not seemingly the same kind of understanding of not necessarily the football club, but the people kind of over here, really? And you know, it's their job, not yours. You know what I mean? It's for you. It's just kind of a hobby, and you've got the kind of things to you. And do you sometimes feel like, you know, going around and knocking on their offices and saying, "Listen, I get this. Why don't you?"
Yeah, having the owners in your city is like a double-edged sword.
I'm sure.
we've also had, you know, I've been able to have the nights at the House of Blues events. We've had the open trainings here. So, I mean, I think I've had a much greater access to Liverpool than the average American fan has. Mm. And that's something that I think a lot of us are thankful for. But at the same time, they've had the owners, you know, you just want to go down to Fenway and you want to just yell and scream. But like, I mean, they've also been having issues with the local Red Sox fan base too. So this is not just a Liverpool issue. It's like a Fenway Sports Group issue, and that they've been getting a lot of backlash with. So I think oligarchs are going to be oligarchs. Yeah. I think the rich people are going to be rich, and if they think it'll get them more money, then the people that are right at their doorfront, are they going to, I'm not sure they're going to mind that too much.
What do you think they'll do next, and what do you think they sort of can do next, really? And that's the question sort of we're all asking ourselves, because, you know, I was having a few conversations on the way with people saying, or maybe they'll decide enough is enough now because they can't do things the sort of their own way or whatever. But they do seem to have a genuine affection for the football club, even though they also seem to have a genuine affection for lots and lots of money. what do you think the sort of next move will be?
I've been wondering this because I listened to John Barnes speak on Talk Sport earlier today, and then and kind of thought about like Project Big Picture, the furlough scheming, the ticket pricing, and how they tried this and they kind of were like, "Oh, I'm sorry." They seemed to be genuine in the moment, and then they kind of didn't change their course, and they kind of continued on that kind of general progression towards trying to get more money out of the club. And I'm wondering at this point, if do they just put on a good show of being able to apologize and get the fans on their way and make, you know, talk to Spirit of Shankly, talk to the Spy on the guys, and do they kind of do their rounds, or do they actually make substantial change to the way that they approach the football club? They've done a lot of great for this club. I mean, from where we were after Higgs and Gillette to now, like, I think you can't deny the impact that they've had. But I'm not sure that trying to completely overturn the entire structure of football in Europe is kind of forgivable at this point. It's hard to forgive them. It's hard to basically just say, "Oh yeah, you said you're sorry, so yeah, you're sorry." And it's hard to kind of like accept that and move on. So, I mean, but then again, if they leave, someone else has to come in. So is that really going to be any better than if one rich owner that we don't know and hasn't actually helped us at all and is starting on a completely blank slate of knowing the culture of Liverpool and the fans, is that even better? And I'm not sure it will be.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but we shall see. Listen, Patrick, thanks so much for joining us over Zoom. I know you've got a busy day ahead of you, so I really appreciate your time. And yeah, hopefully next time we'll just be talking about a big Liverpool win.
I hope so.
And it's still John Gibbons. We continue our journey around the world there, which is quite a fun thing for me to do. And we're going to speak now to Nabs Albasaidi, who's a Liverpool fan from Oman. So Nabs, welcome back to the Anfield Wrap, I should say.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks. It's great to be back.
The reason we're doing this is just to get a few different perspectives and opinions from Liverpool fans all over the world, really, who might have sort of different life experiences and also a different take, you know, on the whole European Super League, now defunct, as we know, European Super League to us. So, Nabs, obviously, we've seen the statement from John Henry now. We've seen the sort of backtracking. What are your sort of reflections over the last few days and the announcements, the moves from the clubs and I guess, the furore that it's all caused?
Well, obviously, the first thing I should mention, so that nobody gets the wrong impression, is that the anti-competitive, closed-shop nature is completely against what most fans and what I believe in. So that's the first thing I should get out of the way. But we should also look at the slightly bigger picture and look at the trajectory of sports business since 1992. So since the Champions League changed from European Cup to the Champions League, and since the English Football League changed to Premier League. And if you extrapolate that projection, it looks like it's going to end up in this sort of US sports model. Now, the big thing here is, I think the first time I went to Anfield, it cost me £2.50.
Yeah.
Right? And the last time I went, it cost me £250. Okay? But every single year, there was an incremental change. Now, there's this parable about the frog. And if you put the frog in water and slowly heat up the water, the frog doesn't notice the difference and eventually gets boiled to death. And that's what's been happening to us since 1992. Every single year, there's an incremental change. But you drop a frog into boiling water, it jumps immediately out. And any change management expert will tell you what they've tried to do over the last, well, it wasn't over the last 48, but what happened 48 hours ago was that they dropped us into boiling water and we jumped out. But do you remember the day, I was trying to look it up, but the government said that football teams could not change their home strips more than once every two or three seasons.
That's right, right? Yeah.
When was that? And now what's happening? Every season we get three, and this year we got four. We got four strips, right? That's now, right. If they had gone from 1992, where there was one strip every 10 years, I think, and they said, right, we're giving you four strips every year, we would have jumped out of the boiling water and screamed. But this is what's happened with this European Super League. Now, what was the main problem with this European Super League was the fact that it was anti-competitive, no promotion, relegation. But there was so much that was progressive about what they were proposing. And of course, nobody's bothered to look into the details. So let me give you another example. Have you ever rented a car? Of course, you probably have. It's a silly question. But yeah. for the listeners, have you ever gone and rented a car? Now, you go and rent a car from Rent-A-Car and you pay, let's say you go and rent the most expensive Ferrari from them, okay? So you're paying, and the analogy is, we're paying them £200,000 a week for this Ferrari, okay? Now, we take the Ferrari and every month somebody comes along and says, I'm going to borrow your Ferrari. Well, who the hell are you to borrow my Ferrari? Why are you taking my Ferrari? I'm paying £200,000. Why are you taking it? Well, I'm the mayor of whatever town you live in. I'm the mayor of, well, hold on, who voted you in mayor? Who made you in charge of? Now, the problem here, the analogy obviously is about a UEFA or the international FIFA taking away our players. But the analogy here is the guy that took your car away from you goes and crashes it. Who's responsible for the for paying the rent car company? You are, not the guy that crashed it. Now, when the G14, so this is going back into 2000, when the G14 went to FIFA and UEFA and said, look, you keep taking our rental car away, and we're the ones that have to pay when you crash it. FIFA said, no, tough shit. We're the guys in charge. Sorry, can I say that word?
Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
tough cheese. We're the guys in charge. We can take your car, we can crash it. And also, by the way, if the guy gets a red card and we decide to sanction him and ban him from football, you have to pay the consequences. So I'm driving through a red light. I don't get the points. You get the points. So the G14 went to these guys and negotiated, and they played hardball. And in the end, the G14 threatened to have a European Super League breakaway in 2000-ish, 2002, yeah. I think. What happened? UEFA caved, FIFA caved. They gave insurance for players on internationals. They agreed to pay a certain amount of money of their salaries and da-da-da. But all of these changes, all of these evolutions, which were minor revolutions, only came about because of hard-headed negotiations. You probably remember Jimmy Hill when he was on Match of the Day, right?
Right, yeah.
Back in the day. But do you know that Jimmy Hill was the ringleader in abolishing the salary cap? So in 1961, the maximum you could play a player was £20 a week. And he was the head of the PFA that managed to force all the clubs by threatening union action, saying, well, we're not going to play. So all of these changes in football have happened only because of minor evolutions. And so as much as we hate this, and again, can't stress enough, this non-relegation, non-promotion thing was the number one downfall of this thing. If you looked at all the other bits, you suddenly realize how beneficial it could have been for football. So as an example, sorry, this is a very long answer to your
question. No, I'm enjoying it.
now we don't want to talk about businessmen in football, but we look at the NFL, the National Football League, and they have the maximum they have at watching a game is 100 million watching the Super Bowl. Now, we had 700 million watching the Champions League final, seven times as many people watching Champions League final. And yet, the NFL gets $10 billion a year from broadcasting rights. Champions League's managed to only get $2 billion. So even though we have seven times more viewers, we're only getting 20% of the money. So basically we're leaving a lot of money on the table. And this is what the European Super League was saying. Immediately their first broadcasting deal was worth twice as much as the Champions League, as UEFA. And also UEFA, one of the negotiation points back in 2000 was UEFA was keeping 70% of the money. They weren't distributing that. Now, the European Super League was saying, well, we're going to get twice as much money and we're going to distribute, I think it was almost 10 times as much money to clubs that weren't in the European Super League. Now, again, I'm not saying the Super League, you know, was a great idea, but these are the sort of movements that the Champions League has been refusing to make, and that the clubs have been, so the European Club Association have been trying to get UEFA to make. So anyway, so that was a very long answer, and I kind of lost my thread.
No, it was all really interesting, and as you say, you know, how many people have sort of really looked into the points and the potential sort of upside, if you like. But then I guess my argument would be that have the football clubs done a good enough job of explaining it? And is it a frustration to you that the football clubs have allowed themselves to lose this PR battle sort of so spectacularly, really?
Absolutely. I was thinking that for businessmen, you know, the one of the first things you do, if you read the room. You do your market research. You figure out. And then you have a PR battle. Whenever you make any change, there's a PR battle. And UEFA won that immediately by going to all the, you know, they went to the prime minister. They made a wonderful PR battle. And in the end, all we ever really thought about or heard from opinion pieces or people was, this is anti-football. This is against the traditions of football. We never, ever heard all the good points that they were trying to, all the negotiation points they've been trying so hard with UEFA to change over the last, well, since 1992. So, yeah, absolutely. Massive PR failure and massive marketing failure, because they had this Project Big Picture a few months ago that was leaked, Project Picture, and they should have known from that that the European Super League was never going to fly with the general public. So yeah, absolute major public PR failure and marketing failure from people who are supposed to be great businessmen.
And that's the thing.
Sorry, so that sounds a bit.
No, it's fine. It's
dark and nasty.
And no, you haven't at all. Do you think? So the football clubs have obviously missed an opportunity now, and they've got to go away and sort of lick the wounds. And for Liverpool in particular, they will feel a sort of missed opportunity to make some changes that they wanted to. What do you think the club can do now to repair the damage that's been done, really? Because there's damage with supporters, there's obviously damage, you know, in terms of a little bit reputationally as well. You know, what do you think their next move is as owners, and what would you like to see, sort of as a Liverpool fan?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to, you know, trust is something that you build up over a long time, but it's destroyed in an instant. And it's very harsh to say this, but I think that it's broken. A lot of it's broken for a lot of fans. I mean, personally, I'd view it slightly less emotionally and just say, listen, they saved us from administration. On the whole, they have been great owners. They made few mistakes. You know, Andy Carroll, you know, they made lots of mistakes and they've owned up to them. How often have you gone into work and your boss has made a mistake and then he just refuses to acknowledge it? Yeah. These guys acknowledge their mistakes, and we judge them with a very different set of criteria than we would judge, say, our own kids or our own parents. You know, your parents make a mistake, you say, well, I forgive them, they've done so much good for me. Unfortunately, I just think that it's going to be very, very hard for FSG to repair the damage.
So from an international perspective then, because we're obviously, you know, based here in Liverpool and we're proud of that, but we've got sort of a local outlook on the kind of teams that Liverpool, you know, are rivals with and are playing and things like that. And the Merseyside derby is huge for us and, you know, and that reflects sort of around the world. But, you know, the argument that, well, actually international supporters would like to see, you know, more games against, you know, the big international sides. So what do you think about that reflected sort of, you know, your background and the people you speak to?
Yeah, so this is a very good point. So when we talk about fans, or certainly when you talk about fans, you're talking about UK-based fans, which is about 6 million Liverpool fans in the UK. And I'm sort of in both camps because I was brought up in the UK, as you can probably tell. And for UK-based fans, our number one rival is Everton or Man United. And, it, you know, generally, the Liverpool fans, it's Everton. But when you go abroad, for most fans, you'll find that Man United is the number one rival to Liverpool. And then that's when you talk about legacy fans. When you talk about the fans that are only now becoming exposed to the Champions League and to the English Premier League, they'll say Man City. And so this idea of a European Super League to the 500 million Liverpool fans outside of Europe, the European Super League is something that they want to see because they have no emotional connection to seeing Liverpool versus Crystal Palace. So where I lived in London was Crystal Palace. So a lot of the time I used to see Liverpool was either at Crystal Palace or Charlton or Wimbledon. But you ask a random fan in Nepal or in any number of third world developing countries, they'll say they want to see Liverpool, Real Madrid. They want to see Liverpool, Man City. And so this European Super League is an idea that internationally is an idea that's going to come, I think, eventually. And as I said, it won't be something where you drop the frog into the boiling water. It'll be something where it'll evolve slowly over the time, over time.
Well, you'd hope it'd be planned a little bit better and certainly sold a little bit better as well. Listen, Nabs, thank you so much for joining. It's been really, really interesting to hear you speak. We'll have to get you on again. thanks.
My pleasure.
Nabs, and take care. I'm now joined there by Patrick Tai, who's in Atlanta, Georgia, who's a subscriber. I've been talking to him a little bit about this whole process, so I thought, why not record this conversation, because it was interesting. So Patrick, first of all, welcome to the Anfield app.
John, thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you. We've been up to Anfield this morning and it had a very different atmosphere to where we were there a couple of days ago, a bit more optimism. And how are you feeling about it all, Patrick? Because it's been a bit of a whirlwind a few days for us all. But this morning after John Henry's statements and after the sort of the climb down, if you like, you know, how are you reflecting on the whole thing?
I'm really excited that cooler heads prevailed. Initially, when this news came out, I think I was watching some matches on Sunday and I was thinking to myself, last year, the PGA Tour had a similar situation where this mysterious league popped up and they wanted to snag players like Tiger Woods. And then eventually cooler heads prevailed. So same thing with Liverpool here and the rest of the English clubs that decided to kind of rank up in the European Super League, really. I was just like, this can't be real, because having gone to a Liverpool match myself, I was at the match when Lallana first scored for Liverpool against West Brom in 14 in Anfield. And there's just so much passion. And it's such a cliche, but there's just so much passion for you guys. So many years of folks on the cop having season tickets. And it's just this corporate soulless kind of gathering of clubs together. It just didn't make a whole lot of sense. So really glad that I saw Chelsea fans got out yesterday. I think some of yours got out as well. So it was exciting to see things sort of come back to normal, and hopefully now we can focus on the top four, and hopefully FSG can really share their thoughts on why they did this, which is still kind of a bit of a head scratcher, but really excited that hopefully we can move past this.
I'm interested to get perspective on the sort of the league and the format, because it's quite an American style system of you know, lack of promotion and relegation and things like that. And when I've been talking to people about it online, you know, there were some supporters of, say, the NFL that say, well, we don't have promotion and relegation and we have this system and it works out really well for us, and you know, it's no less exciting and things like that, and we have different winners, you know, different years and things like that. And it was interesting to me, because I sort of took the point, but I found it really interesting when I've been over to America, and the soccer fans over there, if you like, who get into it heavily, it's almost a kind of a rejection of the kind of, you know, traditional American sports in a way. And I know that the people will like both and things like that, but trying to make it more like the American style, you know, to appeal to an international audience, just seems daft to me. When I've met some American fans, they say, no, the reason we like it is because it isn't like our sports.
Yeah, when I bring my non-soccer watching friends to a pub to watch a game and I explain that, they're fascinated by that concept. And it's great because, for instance, in the NFL, you'll have franchises like the Detroit Lions. They have some history, but they haven't done as well in the past. And at the end of the season, they'll get a high draft pick to be able to draft college players that come to the NFL. But there's no punishment, which is interesting. So I'm just honestly, again, I'm just really excited that cooler heads were able to prevail. And I kind of wish we would have adopted that relegation and promotion system, because there'd be more, I guess, more of a consequence at the end of the season for some of these teams, because at the end of the day, you could win zero games and then nothing's going to happen overall to your squad.
You mentioned the golf comparison before, and I didn't know about this. And so I'm interested if there was any sort of repercussions, is maybe wrong way, but any sort of changes. So the threat was obviously made and then it sort of went away. Was there any sort of comeback from it? And was there any, you know, ideal of, changes? Because there was a little bit of talk around, well, are the big clubs just trying to get a better deal from UEFA or things like that? Did the PGA, you know, have to make any sort of alterations to stop something like this happening again?
So yesterday, it's funny, that came out, there's going to be this pool of money So certain players, if they want to capitalize on income for certain tournaments, they can dive into this pool. But this new PGL group is so mysterious. They'll come out and say, hey, we're going to get Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy to officially join our tour. So nothing official has come out about it, but the PGA, sort of like the different ownership groups yesterday, came out and said, hey, like, we're doing this. We've been around for so many years, and we're not going to kind of take this risk, so to speak. So,
it's interesting. You mentioned a little time before about, you know, knowing the fan base over here and you sort of knowing how this will play with that fan base and almost, you know, what you know, the carp and that sort of being what attracted you. Are you surprised that they don't understand that better if you do? Because, you know, you're someone who came over here for the first time in 2014, so you've obviously supported the club for a little while, but it is from a distance. Are you a little bit surprised that you think, well, look, as soon as you saw this, presumably you thought, well, this doesn't sit right with me, but also I know that this is going to sit right with those people. And if you know that, are you a little bit surprised that John Henry and FSG don't seem to have a better understanding of it?
I'm a bit surprised. Listen, those decisions that they're making overall are obviously a little above my pay grade.
Yeah, of course.
Overall, it was a little frustrating because, like, you had the Champions League final victory, finally won the league, and everything was going so well. And to kind of turn the car in a different direction was just, like, definitely a shock to the system. So I really hope that somehow they can turn it around and really explain why they did this. But I'm glad that they were able to pull out, and hopefully we can make some progress here and focus on the transfer window this offseason and also focus on making top four here coming up.
That's what we all hope. Listen, Patrick, top man, thanks a lot for joining us.
Definitely.
Big love to Atlanta. We were meant to be coming over for a live show, yeah. And it was a kind of one of the casualties of COVID, and we were really gutted not to get over. But, you know, hopefully the offer's still there to come over and have some fun with you guys.
For sure. Most definitely. Definitely got to get you guys over here once things are safe to do so. And again, I listen to you guys every day. You, Neil, Rob Goodman, the whole crew over there is fantastic, and love the rap.
Oh, top man. Thanks very much, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Cheers. Most definitely. Cheers.
And now the fourth and final, last but not least, of course, I'm in Mumbai. Well, not literally, unfortunately, but over Zoom with Neil from Mumbai to get sort of his reaction to what's been a crazy few days. Neil, we were just laughing just before we started about how fast it's all moved. So I don't know if you've been able to catch your breath and reflect yet, but yeah, what a whirlwind.
Yeah, it's been a mad couple of days for all of us fans too, because, you know, everyone's talking about it, even on our WhatsApp groups and even just all friends talking about it, because a lot of the friends we have to support the top teams, and I think all of them were against it, but I'll just speak about myself here because I'm just glad that the whole Super League is not happening, because, you know, I didn't just like the whole idea of it, and the fact that you know, it just goes against everything, especially our club is for, and just didn't like the whole format and, you know, how that the whole thing was a closed thing. And I'm glad that everyone, you know, together spoke against it, the players and mostly the fans and, you know, ex-players and legends and everyone. So, yeah, I'm glad that, you know, we could finally put an end to it once and for all. And I hope it doesn't, you know, happen again. But yeah, I mean, I just hope that, you know, as fans, we speak up against similar things like, you know, what the UEFA are doing or what the Premier League is doing or what, you know, in UK, the Sky is doing, because, you know, this, I just hope that we can collectively do the same against all those things, or let's say racism, because, you know, people need to speak up equally against it. You know, have you seen that the club has done that and few players have done that, but, you know, we need larger voices for similar issues that are there. And just that, but the thing is that I don't see, you know, people or, you know, UEFA or, you know, likes of Premier League or FIFA doing anything against it, because I think they're too powerful. And, you know, I don't expect, you know, like something like a Qatar World Cup, where, you know, there have been so many labor right issues and people have died building the stadium. So that's, those things are equally as important to this. And yeah, I think we should like collectively speak up against it, but I don't see, you know, a price of a ticket coming down from, let's say, £70 to like a £20-£25, which is more affordable, or something like a shirt, which is like about approximately £75 or £100, coming down to something which is £30, you know, to make it more affordable for the working class fans and the fans abroad as well. So yeah, I think you know, top clubs will just keep on, you know, end up with more money. If it's not ESL, then it'll probably be UEFA and the Premier League as well. So I think that'll just end up happening either ways. But what really bothered me was, you know, how you know, I felt really sorry for Jurgen Klopp and the players on Monday, especially as I was really sad to see. And I think he was hung out dry out. I mean, on, because unfortunately a match was on that day, and you know, he was facing the song of the media that day. And but I think he spoke well, and he tried to maintain a balance as well. So I think that really bothered me a lot. Yes.
Yeah, I think it bothered a lot of us really that he was sort of, you know, expected to, I guess, front up and face the questions on something that he didn't have anything to do with, really. Just a couple of things to pick up on what you said. You mentioned that all your friends, you know, and people you know all support different top clubs. I presume that is not just the top English clubs, but also the top European clubs. So you'll know people who support, say, Real Madrid and Barcelona,
and people definitely. Like that.
So was there a temptation amongst any of you to think, well, it'd be great to play them every year because, you know, the rivalries we have sort of between us and things, and they go, was there any temptation there to think, well, the more games with you know, my friends' teams and who they support might be more enjoyable?
Yes, I think someone in our group joked about that, you know, we'd probably end up having, you know, match screenings or, you know, the match parties that we have probably every weekend because, you know, we'd probably end up meeting every weekend like that, because sometimes we meet just for the big games and not for all games because of the timing issues. But yeah, I think, of course, the Real Madrid fans did not speak up at all. I think they were, I mean, especially on social media, and I was just checking the handles if they're saying anything against it, but they did not. But I think, I'm not sure if they were in support of it or not, but I think the English club supporting fans were definitely against it, the whole idea. And I think people get that, you know, okay, you'll be playing the likes of Real Madrid or Bayern Munich or Inter Milan week in, week out. But I think that's what ruins, or it wouldn't make it exciting, because, you know, when you play Barcelona, that thing happened like after like a few years. When you're playing Real Madrid, it happens every few years. So it makes it more exciting and something to look forward to. That's what we're looking at. And that's what, you know, we stay up for at 12:30 at night. If you're going to play them every week, then people will probably end up losing interest as well. As exciting as it sounds right now,
yeah,
maybe it won't be as exciting when you're just playing them week in, week out. And people still like, you know, we probably won't have the Merseyside derby, or, you know, people still like playing the likes of Southampton or Brighton, or, you know, the clubs that have been newly promoted, because there's a sense of a newness that, okay, you're going to play a new club in the Premier League as well. So yeah. that probably would be lost as well. No, maybe in case if we got banned from the Premier League or something.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, we'll never know now, I guess. The other thing I want to pick up on, you said, you talked about, you know, being against it yourself, but then you said, especially because of the values of Liverpool Football Club. And I think people might be surprised how much that means to supporters, you know, from different parts of the world who maybe haven't got the traditional family connection sort of with the city, really, is that I think there's maybe a perception with fans, you know, in different countries that, oh, they like the players, and, you know, they like the, the style of play and the manager, whereas for so many of you, you buy into the values of the team as well, and that's important to you.
Yeah, definitely, because I think of course there are newer fans as well, but from especially people who are my age and, like, you know, who've been supporting the club for at least 10 plus years, they know and understand what the club stands for. You know, they understand the heritage of the club, they understand the history and what values, you know, likes of Bill Shankly and Bob Paisley have embedded upon this club. So they understand that. And just that the value of the competition is as important. The likes of Champions League you've seen in 2005 and I think last couple of years back, the feel of those, of those competitions are important to our fans. I think, you know, just the whole music and the whole just getting down to it, like, you know, when you just players are walking out and you hear the Champions League tune, I think that probably that touch probably would have been lost with the Super League.
Yeah, absolutely. As well. Absolutely. Just a final word to you, Neil, because, you know, we're here to sort of talk about, you know, the FSG and things like that. But just before we go, I've got to ask you about how you guys are getting on as a supporters club in these current times, because we've all seen on the news that, you know, the pandemic's particularly tough in India at the moment. So you guys have got a thriving supporters club. You know, I've seen the videos and it looks great fun. Obviously, not being able to do that at the moment. How's it been for you guys staying in touch with each other and, you know, making sure that you're there for each other as fellow Reds?
Yeah, definitely. I think we are in the middle of a second wave, which has been worse than the first wave. And we're probably reporting like 250,000 cases every day. And I think that I don't think there's anyone whose friends or family haven't been affected right now. So it's a very, very difficult time for everyone out here, because there are lack of hospital beds and lack of key medicines which are required. So we are we're trying to keep in touch with everyone and making sure that, you know, if there's anyone who needs anything, we probably amplify it through our social media, or, you know, check with our friends or family, or if there's someone who people who know, then, you know, it's we can probably help people out there. And we are always there as a supporters club to help everyone out. Yes.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear that you're trying your best for each other. And obviously, I'll be thinking of you, and I'm sure everyone will, as you sort of try and get through this. But Tom, man, thanks a lot for Neil for joining us. And of course, all our callers before as well. Hope you've enjoyed that. Do let us know if it's been interesting. It certainly has for me. But Neil, nice to speak to you, mate. Podcast Network.